Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Chronicle sports writer Rusty Simmons, who has been a big help to me on the Warriors beat. During our conversation, we fielded readers' pressing questions, including one about Kelly Oubre's future.
Rusty, thank you so much for joining me back on the pod. You know, even during a pandemic, it felt like I was seeing you pretty often over Zoom and hearing your voice because you were such a huge help on the Warriors beat this past season. But I haven't seen you or heard from you in a little bit because I know you took a little time off. I was knee deep with a big minor league baseball series. But you're back at it. And I know you're going to be the go-to guy for Team USA coverage at the Chronicle. You're on that on a daily basis with the Draymond Green beat and the Steve Kerr beat. We actually didn't get really any Team USA questions. We're doing a mailbag podcast this week. Got a bunch of great questions, but we didn't get any about Team USA. And I'm actually genuinely curious, like, what do you think Draymond's role is going to be on this Team USA team? He didn't play a lot in Rio. Is it going to be kind of a similar situation?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Coach Popovich on the first day, Tuesday, talked about three centers, Draymond Green, Bam Adebayo, and Kevin Love. So that's kind of the way they're going into it. All power forwards in the NBA, but centers in international hoop. And it was the first day, so he was trying to figure it out. I wouldn't be surprised at all that because of Draymond's voice and defensive ability, if he's not the starting center for Team USA. But I also wouldn't be shocked if he plays 7 minutes a game and provides that voice from the sideline while Kevin Love and Bam Adebayo are playing all the minutes. Neither one would shock me. One day into it, I'm not even sure Pop knows yet.
Yeah. I think that's definitely where he's going to be the biggest asset is as a small ball center in given how the teams they face play. I think that makes a lot of sense. So maybe it sounds like maybe he will play a little bit more than he did in Rio. I think he's proven this past year that he's still a high level player and can help out. I think he's just one of those guys where a lot of it depends on the makeup of the roster, what you need. You know, he's not like one of those guys that you have to have on the floor when you're talking about an all-star laden roster, you know. But if you need the facilitating and the defensive toughness and those types of things, obviously he's better than anyone. So,
and they don't have like a legitimate center. So it'll be interesting to see like if they do play against Jokic or Rudy Gobert.
I think of Bam as a center, but yeah,
you might be right. Yeah. That's probably more legitimate
for in certain ways, but
so they could go into it that way where it's not even what they want. It's matchup based. So if Bam's a more prototypical legitimate center, maybe he starts against the Goberts and Jokic's of the world, and Draymond starts against somebody else. Or Kevin Love. Popovich praised Kevin Love like he was completely in shape and back to being in his prime form yesterday. So who knows?
I forgot about Kevin Love, and then I saw your story today about, you know, maybe the Warriors can sign him on a vet minimum deal, which is doing numbers, by the way. So I think there's a lot of interest there. We actually got a question about that, so we'll get into that in a little bit later. But bunch of good questions this week. Hit a wide range of topics. We actually have one or two minor league baseball questions. Never thought we'd be talking about that on Warriors Off Court, but I did dip my toe into minor league baseball and did a big three-part series. So I don't mind talking a little San Jose Giants, San Francisco Giants. But our first question.
Congratulations, by the way, on that series. Everybody should, I'm sure they have read it already, but go back. Like, it's sit down worth a coffee and a meal while you're reading it. It's great stuff.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. This is from at Taviora. Is Kelly Oubre really important to the Warriors? Is it a risk to lose him and find someone else? How does Kelly Oubre fit in the Warriors' plans coming into next season? This is a pertinent question. I mean, every time we do a mailbag, we get at least one or two Oubre questions because his future with the Warriors is so murky. But I think this is really pertinent right now because Kelly came out a couple of days ago and talked with Chris Haynes on a podcast about his future with the Warriors. And then my good friend who's been on this podcast many times, Wes Goldberg, had a story today where he talked to the agent. And from what we heard from Oubre in that podcast with Chris Haynes and what we heard from his agent through Wes Goldberg, very different narratives. Very different narratives. Oubre, just kind of reading between the lines, listening to the cadence in his voice, listening to how he addressed certain questions, how he talked about last season, it's hard to imagine a world where he comes back. He called it unfair that he was demoted to a bench role. He clearly was not happy about moving into that bench role, which was not surprising based off what we know about Kelly. He's someone who understandably really values that bench role, feels like, or starting role, had felt like he earned it. And, you know, even though I think he handled it pretty well in season, I don't think he was super happy. So his comments to Chris Haynes just kind of reinforced that. And we all know that if he does come back to the Warriors next season, he's almost definitely going to have to be in a bench role when Klay comes back. So that 1 + 1 = 2, you know, right? Like, that would lead one to believe he's not coming back. There is the narrative, though, from his agent saying, you know, everyone's good. We're on the same page with the Warriors. They want him back. Kelly's down to come back. Kelly, you know, their relationship's still really good. But you gotta take everything with a huge asterisk when you're talking about agent speak, because obviously they have a incentive to boost the stock price of their client and to play every angle possible. I think that Kelly is the type of guy who, even though he probably understands that side of it objectively, he is a very emotional dude. And when he's sitting down on a podcast, he can't hide how he actually feels.
Yeah. Yep.
And give candid answers. And if you listen to that Chris Haynes podcast, it was pretty clear that he's not super happy with the Warriors. And it's hard to imagine a world where he comes back, especially since, from what we're hearing right now, they're going to ask for 20 mil plus, which is a lot for anyone, but much less a guy who has not proven he's a winner in this league. He's had a negative plus minus every single year he's been in the league. The Warriors were notably better with him off the floor this season. I don't think it's a huge surprise that after he got injured, he and James Wiseman got injured, that they started to play a lot better. It's not a huge surprise to me that even when he came back, he was still coming off the bench in favor of Kent Bazemore, who's not maybe as talented of a player as Kelly Oubre, but I think fits the Warriors system better and makes less mistakes. So I'm not anyone who's listened to this podcast, anyone who's read me probably knows I'm not super high on Kelly Oubre, especially his fit with the Warriors. I think he's kind of a little bit of an empty stats guy. I think you look at, oh, the 15 plus points per game, and you think, oh, he's a good NBA player. Well, there's a lot of players in the NBA who can average 15 points per game. There's a lot. They're not all winning players. They're not going to all help you win games. You know, they can put numbers up, but I would much rather have more Kent Bazemore types than Kelly Oubre types, because those guys serve winning much more. You know, they make sound decisions. They read the floor well. They can react in the Warriors read and react system. They can defend multiple positions at a high level. I think Oubre is overrated defensively. I've said that a few times. So I think that this isn't going to happen. I think that he's not going to be brought back. I do think the Warriors are going to try to bring him back. Everything I'm hearing is the Warriors are going to try to bring him back, but solely as an asset. Right. They don't see him as a future piece. I don't see him as like the guy who's going to put him over the top and be a championship contender. But given where they're at with the luxury tax and what have you, you might as well try to bring him back just to try to shop him and get something for him. The truth is they whiffed by not trading him at the deadline. Even if the offers weren't great, they should have traded him. Like whatever you could get for him, you just let him go. Because I think we're seeing right now that there was never a high chance of him coming back next season.
Well, and that's why the narratives are so disparate right now is Kelly Oubre sees himself not only as we're having a conversation about whether he's a starter versus a seventh or eighth man. He sees himself as a superstar. He thinks that he's one of the top 30 players in the league. So that's his side of it. The agent and the Warriors obviously have to talk the other side, which is what makes sense.
Right.
The agent has to say, of course we want to come back. We want to leave every option available. Of course, we want to get into a bidding war. And the agent might also use the Warriors to get Oubre where he wants to go and to get more money than a team wants to pay. And the Warriors have to be on that side of it too. They have to be in those negotiations of saying, yeah, we don't want this guy, but we can help you go somewhere else to get something back. And that's why we're hearing such different narratives is Oubre's thought process of what's going on versus what actually will happen in the NBA are very different.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that he even agreed to go on that podcast with Chris Haynes, given, you know, where he's at, you know, and if he goes on, you think you'd have a really distinct narrative that he was trying to, you know, get out there. And it didn't seem like he really, even if he did have a narrative that he wanted to get out there, he didn't stick to the script. And you know, honestly, that's what I like. I like that about Kelly Oubre. Kelly Oubre was one of the better quotes on the team because he let you know how he was feeling at all times. He wore his emotions on his sleeve. And as a journalist, as a reporter, you love that. If you're his agent, maybe you don't love that so much.
Or if you're an NBA coach, right? Like this was a weird year where we didn't get to spend time in a locker room and on the road with these guys. So I don't know Kelly Oubre that well. I know him through Zoom and how he plays. And I think his personality is probably pretty close to the way he plays, where for one possession, he can be an absolute savage on defense, picking you up 94 feet. But then there are eight possessions in a row where he's kind of off the cuff. Even if he went into this interview with his agent telling him, hey, here is the narrative, here's what you're supposed to do. And he started that way. And then he goes wild for eight possessions. And then he has a play where you're just like, oh my goodness, he's completely fantastic offensively. He just out-efforted everybody to get this rebound and is more talented than people and has a reverse putback dunk. And you're like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. And then for 12 possessions, he's completely out of the system and is not reading and reacting and not doing anything he's supposed to.
Right.
So I can only say this from an outsider's perspective, but I think his personality is probably pretty similar to the way he plays.
Next question is from Matt Byer Duncan. Everyone in the blogosphere seems to have such an itchy, quote unquote, trade Wiseman trigger finger. As a fan, I am very skeptical that he's a bust. I saw flashes. What's the internal temperature on this topic at GSW? I feel like this is directed at us because
probably,
you know, we Chronicles had a column or two advocating for trading Wiseman, or I should say Scott Osler has. We've had our other columnists, Bruce Jenkins, say the opposite, that he would not trade Wiseman. I have been a proponent of being open to trading Wiseman if it makes sense, though I'm not 100% convinced that there will be a deal out there that makes sense. Look, bottom line, the Warriors like Wiseman. They feel like he can and probably will become a really good player in this league. But they are not married to him. They not, you know, he's not near that level where he's a Steph or a Clay or a Draymond where you can put the no trade label on him. They're very open to trading him because he is one of their few assets that they could put together with, you know, the draft picks and what have you for a difference making player. And I think that they're well aware that they need to be in win now mode, that the window is beginning to start to close with their aging core, and that, you know, the timeline just isn't great with Wiseman. They can't necessarily afford to wait much longer for him to develop, especially with, you know, missing the entire offseason with the knee injury. So, you know, you've seen speculation out there recently about them being willing to package someone like Wiseman and the draft picks for someone like Pascal Siakam. And, you know, I think that if an offer like that was possible, I think that the Warriors would be very interested. I think they'd be willing to do that. And, you know, if he ends up going somewhere else and blossoming into a perennial all-star, you know, and the Warriors have egg on their face, they don't win another championship, then so be it. You know, you made the swing you needed to make, and that's the risk you have to take to chase greatness. You know, you have to roll the dice. I think being right now, they're in this like limbo area where it's like they're just kind of waiting on Wiseman, knowing that it doesn't really fit what they're trying to do, but they don't really know what else to do. Like, make a decision and do it and go for it and live with the results. And I'm starting to think it might be more likely than I initially thought that a trade happens this offseason involving Wiseman, because certain guys are starting to become potentially available who would warrant that type of package and make sense. You know, Siakam being one, and, you know, maybe even Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from Oklahoma City. These are guys that I think would make sense to part with Wiseman for.
I'm actually the opposite. I thought leading into this offseason, leading into the playoffs, that they were going to move him. And I get the opposite sentiment. I know they're having every conversation. Mr. Lacob and Bob Myers have proven that if there's a name out there, if there's a star out there, they're going to go at least have the conversation. But it's a weird time for James Wiseman. I always say the thing, like, no, a draft pick is never more valuable than before he's been drafted. So yeah. When they had the number two pick, it was valuable. Then he didn't play well and got hurt. This is like his least valuable point ever. So I'm kind of at the point where they're going to have every conversation possible. And if another franchise makes a bad decision, then of course they'll jump on it. But I tend to believe that they're not panicked, that they're going to have these conversations and realize that he's as invaluable as he possibly can be right now. Even if he comes back next year and is an average player, at least he's not a hurt average player, right? Like right now, when you're trying to shop him, he's a hurt average player. So I think they think he's going to be a decent player, if not good. There's some in the organization who think he's going to be a star. And right now, that is not the perspective around the league. So I think they'll hold on to him. They're going to shop him and 7 and 14 and try to see what's out there. But I just don't think there's going to end up being a good deal.
Yeah, it's very possible. But the fact is that they're open to it. And
they are.
I think that they need to be open to it, given just where they are.
We'll have more of my conversation with Rusty Simmons right after the break.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is from at GSW Reddit. Curious what your thoughts are on Mulder as a potential two-way candidate in the event the Warriors' 15-man roster is full and they waive him. I haven't really seen it discussed. Is the expectation, if waived, that there's at least one team out there that would claim him? First of all, shout out to GSW Reddit. Phenomenal Twitter follow. Really on top of stuff. Great information. The guy who runs it is a little bit of a a salary cap wizard himself and has really good breakdowns and what have you. So props to him. And I think it's a good question. It's a very GSW Reddit question because it's very nuanced and that's what he's all about. But I like Mulder. I've said that many times in the pod. I think he's underrated. I think he's a legitimate NBA player. I don't understand why some Warriors fans seem to be so down on him. Look, he's not necessarily a top eight rotation player on a good team, but he's a really solid guy to round out your rotation or even have, you know, as a fill-in rotation guy when needed. But the way the roster's starting to come together, I think it's very possible that there's not a place for him on next season's roster. Because, you know, if the Warriors want to bring over someone like Justinian Jessup, you know, maybe there's not a place for Mulder since they have some kind of overlapping skill sets. And Mulder's contract is non-guaranteed next season, so you could cut him pretty easily and not be out any money. So if that happens, though, I honestly think that he's proven enough to get a guaranteed contract somewhere else. I don't think he's a two-way player at this point. I think he's shown enough to be on a guaranteed deal somewhere, either as a 12th or 13th man somewhere. I think there's some teams in the league where he could be a legitimate bona fide rotation player. I look at someone like the Magic and I'm like, if I'm them, I would love to have the floor spacing that Michael Mulder provides. So I would think he gets that type of offer from someone if it comes to that. And I don't think he'd be available in a two-way. I think he's kind of graduated past that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I hadn't seen the idea of him being on a two-way yet. So it is a really good question. I think you and I like Mulder more than the NBA likes Mulder. You've convinced me. Like, I thought he was a likable guy, a good locker room guy, and a good shooter. And you were right. He's a better defender than I thought. He's a better athlete than I thought. I think he is an NBA player. The problem is, and I know this is like overreaction playoff time, but my problem during the playoffs is I watch these games and it's not legitimate NBA players. Teams that advance in the playoffs have 10 NBA players who we're not having a conversation whether they're a two-way guy or whether they're an end of the bench guy. Like, they have 10 guys who are good at basketball and can play in the NBA. That's been the problem with the Warriors for 2 years, is they have 3 NBA players and, you know, maybe 4. And then the rest are fringe guys. That's the problem. It's not that they have 2 great and a guy returning from injury who are NBA players. And then the rest are, what did we find? Are this guy a fringe guy? That's the problem. These guys, these teams that advance in the NBA playoffs, these teams that are competing for finals have 10 players.
Right. And I honestly think that if Mulder leaves the Warriors, he'll land on a team that's not, you know, a contender. He'll probably land on a team that does not have 10 NBA players, a team that needs to thrust a fringe guy like Mulder into a bigger role than maybe he deserves. That's why I mentioned the Magic, you know, because they're such a horrible shooting team. I think if they can just get a guy who's a solid knockdown shooter like Mulder, that they would probably play him 20, 25 minutes a night solely because he can actually hit shots. But look,
so that brings
Warriors, the bottom line with the Warriors is that, you know, they don't want to be in a position where they're depending on Mulder in any way. Like, the whether or not they keep Mulder discussion should not be a big factor in the Warriors' brain trust right now. That's something that you decide once the roster is pretty set. You know, it's not going to move the needle. You know, they need, hopefully the Warriors, if they do bring back Mulder next season, have a good enough rotation where Mulder's not even in the conversation to get meaningful minutes. You know, hopefully he's just a fill-in guy who comes in and knocks down shots here and there every fifth game when the team's healthy, and when guys get injured, he can come in and, you know, help you out. He knows the system. You could do a lot worse with a guy in that type of role, but if he's playing meaningful minutes next season, that's not good for the Warriors.
Something's got horribly wrong, right?
Because they had a bad offseason, so yeah. Or they had some injuries. You don't want that happening if you're the Warriors. Next question is from at Tom Bomb 35. If Golden State wants to keep Wiggins, what are some trade targets to go after using Wiseman, number 7, and number 14? If they sign the picks and wait 30 days to trade them, there's many options with those combined salaries. Possibly SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, LaVine, or Wood. Could also add more picks if needed. That's a good question. That's a good question. And I have not scoured the NBA enough and the possibilities enough to give you a thorough answer and a thorough list of names at this moment. But what I will say is that I think that you're hitting on something that's important and interesting. I think when we talk about a big trade, we always talk about Wiggins because of the big contract and what have you. But there are a lot of intriguing pieces out there that don't necessarily fall into that level of contract. And I think that the possibilities of pairing Wiseman with the two picks and maybe someone like a Jordan Poole, you know, like a good young player, not, you know, a Wiggins level player, but a good young player. I think that that might be able to not necessarily get you an all-star level guy, but get your foot in the door for someone who can be very helpful and be a difference maker for you next season. And I think, this wouldn't be a proven guy, but I think one interesting possibility out there, and I would seriously consider it if I'm the Warriors, would be trading both picks 7 and 14, packaging it with Wiseman and or Poole to move up to like number 3 in the draft with Cleveland, and then try to get the number 3 pick, which hopefully you would take someone like Jalen Suggs out of Gonzaga, and then also like a solid rotation piece. Maybe you can get like a Larry Nance or something like that. I would be down for that if I'm the Warriors. I'm not sure Cleveland would do that. They might get better offers for that 3 pick. But I do think that Cleveland would be open to moving off the 3 pick solely because they already have a very guard-centric roster in Garland and Sexton. And whoever the best guys they could take at 3 would be guards and Jalen Green and Jalen Suggs. So the value for that pick to other teams is going to be much higher than it is to them. So I think, you know, it would make sense for them to move. And I think the Warriors could put together a package for that as strong of a package for that as anyone. So you're, by doing a deal like that, you're ensuring that you don't have too many young guys on your roster because you're not using both picks. You're also getting rid of a somewhat of a project young guy in Wiseman. And then you're bringing in hopefully a helpful rotation player with proven experience, someone like a la Nance or what have you. And then you're getting a potential franchise cornerstone in Jalen Suggs or Jalen Green. I know the Warriors are high on both of them, so I think they'd be open to either of those guys at 3. I think Jalen Suggs is a little bit more ready to play a major role as a rookie, but I think Green might have a little higher ceiling, so it kind of depends on what you're looking for, but I think both would be good picks there.
What was the handle's name? Tom Bomb?
Tom Bomb.
Yeah. I'm going to take Tom Bomb one step further. most of the conversations we have right now, and especially out of the combine, were the Warriors making a move for a big time player, a proven all-star who comes with a huge salary. So while they were shopping Wiseman and the picks, it always had to include Andrew Wiggins. And almost none of the proposals that I heard were that much of an upgrade from Andrew Wiggins. So it was like, why are you giving up all these assets?
Yeah, even Siakam. Like is Siakam a better player than Wiggins? Yeah, a little bit probably, but is it really worth giving up Wiggins and all these other pieces for Siakam?
Right.
You already know that Wiggins is a good fit for your system.
So I'll take Tom's discussion a little bit further. you don't even have to wait the 30 days. What I think the Warriors are going to do is wait until the trade deadline. They're going to have all the conversations they can this offseason. But at the trade deadline, you know how healthy Klay Thompson is. You know better what the fits are like. You know so much more. You know how healthy has Wiseman come back? How has he developed? You know what the two draft picks look like. Now you can make an informed decision, and it doesn't have to be salary-based. It doesn't have to include Wiggins. You can package three young players and get someone who you think is going to develop better or faster than them or can help right away. I just think they're in a situation where while they're going to have all these conversations, they might be in a more informed situation closer to the trade deadline when they actually know what the fits are like, what the health is like, what they have, and what they can get back.
Yeah, and it's probably not what a lot of Warriors fans want to hear, but you're probably
it's not. It's what nobody wants to hear. Yeah,
you might be right about that. The next question is from at Mark Brack 5. How likely is a Kevin Love and buyout / vet minimum signing for the Dubs? Rusty, you just wrote about this, so I want you to take the lead on this answer.
The buyout is very likely. there's a clip from him this year just getting so frustrated with all these young players in Cleveland where he just throws an inbound pass, just completely quits. I've never seen Kevin Love act like that. I know it's a rough time, but he's on his own in Cleveland. They're going, as you mentioned, second Garland. They have a backcourt dominant thing that they're working with. And it seems like there is actually a way they're going. I don't think that includes Kevin Love. I don't think Kevin Love wants to be there. A buyout to me seems very possible. Now, the next part of that question is to sign with the Warriors. I'm sure the Warriors fans would like that. And the Warriors are in all of those conversations, but Brooklyn is probably a better option for him, right? Like Philadelphia is probably a better option for him. The Clippers are probably a better option for him. I'm not sure the Warriors are on the first part of all of those discussions anymore. Now, Draymond and Steve Kerr are going to have something to say about that during Team USA, but Kevin Durant's also his roommate. So Brooklyn might be a number one in this.
Yeah, I think Love would be a great fit on the Warriors in a lot of ways. He's a great passing big. The Warriors love passing bigs. He can knock down three. He's a really good fit for what the Warriors are trying to do. But this is not the Warriors of 3 or 4 years ago where you're going to get someone like Kevin Love to come to you on a way below market value deal. He's going to a team that is ready-made to 100% be in the mix for a title. The Warriors are not quite there yet. I don't think they're super far off, but they're not quite there yet, which is why I don't think that Love is going to be a Warrior. It's really that simple. The next question, you know, as we talked about earlier, I did a ton of work over the past month on a minor league baseball series where I kind of dug pretty deep into a bunch of different issues facing the minor leagues. Part one focused on the front offices of minor leagues, minor league teams, how they handled a year away from baseball and how they're kind of navigating this new world. Part two focused on a lightly touted undrafted prospect for the Giants and how guys like him handle the harsh realities of being a minor league player with the low pay and the tough lifestyle and all these things. And then part three was basically a profile of Marco Luciano, who is the Giants number one prospect, the number seven prospect in all baseball, a 19-year-old phenom out of the Dominican Republic. But in that profile, I used it as an opportunity to kind of get into what the process is like for these young players from Latin American countries and some of the struggles they face to even sign a major league contract. A lot of these guys are farmed out at 11, 12 years old at a young age, stop going to school. And then if they don't make it, can face a pretty tough reality. It looks though like Marco Luciano is probably going to make it. he's going to be the exception. He's a special talent. He's already has 14 home runs in low A. He's probably going to get promoted here pretty soon to either high A or probably high A, Eugene. And then, you know, should be on the fast track to a big league call up sometime in the next year or so. He's just that good of a hitter. His power is incredible, especially for someone his size. He's gotten a lot of comparisons to Alfonso Soriano. But the reason I talk at length about him is because Sam from Redwood City, this was an email question. Sam from Redwood City, is Luciano the real deal? He's putting up big numbers in low A, but do you really think he's the next Fernando Tatis? Rusty, in addition to all your Warriors responsibilities, you also keep a good pulse on minor league baseball. You do a weekly minor league baseball roundup on the A's and Giants. And I know you actually have also written about Luciano a little bit in the recent weeks. What's your response to this question?
Yeah, but I joke at my job at the Chronicle. I think they haven't found anything I'm good at, so they just have me do everything. So yeah, they've got me doing a numbers column and a weekly minor league baseball stuff. And then I'm supposed to know everything about basketball. They haven't figured out what I'm good at, so they just have me do everything. My impression of Luciano is that nothing in baseball is for sure. Like the guy who drafted Derek Jeter said, if you get one of these right every 40 years, you're a superstar. Like it's impossible to guess who is going to be a good baseball player. If I had to guess, I would say that he's going to make it. From everything that I talked to the manager and the hitting coach and several people around him, and they all talked about beyond his sheer talent that at such a young age, he knows how to ask the questions about what adjustment he can make. And then his talent clicks in because he can make the adjustment. And that's huge. The ability to accept failure in baseball is huge. He has a different kind of mindset that meshes with talent that I think he's about as close to a sure thing as you can. I don't know if he's going to be a shortstop, but he's going to hit in Major League Baseball. I would almost guarantee that.
That's a big question, is does he stay at short? I think the Giants would like him to stay at short. I think they believe that he can stay at short. He is good enough defensively to stay at that position. But if he does, there's also a word where I think he could be a solid outfielder, maybe even a second or third baseman. He's got good arm strength. But what's really going to matter is his bat. His power numbers are pretty incredible. I know it's low A, but the guy's 19 years old, had never played above short season single A until this year, and has just been absolutely crushing. I mean, by far has the most home runs in all of single A, low or high A, has, like you said, made a lot of really good adjustments. When you have to understand, when a team like the Giants invest $2.6 million in a 16-year-old, they sign him to a $2.6 million signing bonus at 16. When they do that, they're doing a lot of homework before they do that, you know, just like the Warriors would do whenever they make a big draft pick. They talk to everyone close to him. They talk to his family, they talk to his friends, they talk to his neighbors, they talk to his teachers. Everything that came back about him was, this dude is a baseball junkie who's just completely like the first guy at the ballpark, the last guy to leave. He's every cliche that you can have along those lines, which is exactly what you want, because I know from covering the NBA that all these guys are super talented. They're all crazy talented, but the guys who are the superstar guys, the perennial all-star guys, those are the guys who are the hardest workers. There aren't any lazy all-stars.
Right.
You don't become an all-star without being a grinder. Because you know, I know some other guys in the league who are probably as talented as these all-stars who are barely getting by and you know, cashing paychecks in the league because they just don't have the same passion, they don't have the same work ethic. And I think Luciano is one of those people who has it all. I think he has the athleticism, I think he has the physical tools, I think he has the mental makeup, and I think he has the work ethic. And I think he's going to be a franchise player
I love the Soriano comp that you had, like, because I was writing it in the time a lot of the comparisons were to Tatis, as the reader mentioned, and to Soto and to Acuna, who like are supremely talented and part of the change of baseball, like where you're expressive and passionate and joyful while you're playing. And I love the idea of Soriano, because kind of that middle infielder turned outfielder, but he was ahead of it. He was enjoying and playing passionately on the Yankees, where you're not allowed to have a beard, right?
Yeah.
You're not allowed to have long hair. And he loved the game and loved winning and fighting and showed it, which was not acceptable for the Yankees. He was way ahead of the game. And I think that's very similar to Luciano.
Yeah, he's compared to Tatis and these guys just because he's kind of a young phenom.
Short. Right, right.
That's really – but in terms of the actual game itself, he's the most like Soriano.
Yeah.
I think he can have a Soriano-like career. Now, a lot can happen. You know, I mean, there is a major difference between low A and the majors. There's been a lot of guys who have been absolutely dominant in low A and then not done anything in the majors, maybe not even reached the majors. He's going to reach the majors. Is he a dominant player? That is still yet to be determined for sure. But I think everything that we've seen so far points in the direction of yes.
Yep.
And that's great for the Giants, because they've whiffed on a lot of international prospects. They needed this one. They just from a morale standpoint for that international scouting department. Rusty, thank you so much. I can't believe we just spent a few minutes talking about the Giants on a Warriors Off-Court podcast, but you know what? I'm my role is changing. I'm expanding my scope, and I'm willing to talk about anything I write about. I've been writing about minor league baseball, so you know, I don't mind talking about it. But Rusty, thank you so much for joining me back on the podcast. Where can our listeners and readers find your stuff?
I'm old school. I hope you still subscribe to the hard copy of the newspaper. With that, you get all the online content, which is amazing. But you got to admit, Connor, it's way better when you see it in print. Think about your minor league series.
Yeah.
Three stories in print, just the way it was laid out and the photos that Carlos put with it, just beautiful stuff. But there's lots of great stuff online too, and you get that with it. So hopefully you subscribe and follow Connor on Twitter, because he retweets everything.
Our thanks to Rusty Simmons for joining me on the podcast. Really enjoyed chatting with him. Warriors Off-Court is a production of the San Francisco Chronicle. Support Warriors Off-Court and the newsroom that creates it by signing up for a Chronicle membership at sfchronicle.com/pod.